Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Heart of Sports with Jason Springer and Jeff Cohen, powered by ELEC A25. We are thrilled to join you on WWDB 860 AM, 97.5 HD2, part of the Beasley Media Group, ready to help you move into the weekend, talking about all the news in the world of sports. We've got Keith Pompey later to break down the Sixers. Not much happening with the Phillies and Eagles. So Matvei Michkov starts tonight, Jeff. How about that with the Flyers?
Huh? What? That's how you really, that's how you plan on starting the show?
I'm struggling, man.
That's impressive. I'm glad that you went positive. If you want to spend the rest of the show talking hockey, feel free.
I know it's a couple days later, but I'm still struggling with this. And you told me in the middle of it, just turn it off.
Yeah.
It doesn't make me a better fan to suffer through it.
Yeah. And yet if we were on the air during that game, I would have told the entire city, turn it off. This isn't going to go well. And look, we tried to put a positive spin on this from the beginning, but the fact of the matter was, how many times did I tell you? First of all, there's major flaws in this team. And second of all, the Mets were literally acting like the Phillies from 2 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, that was clear. And you know, people say they're the hot team. They've been hot since June. So it's not like they got streaky in August.
I think they've had the best record in National League.
Yeah, so it's not like, oh, they got hot at the end of August and they're just a hot team. Like, they've been one of the best teams in baseball since they all came back from London, when the Phillies seemed to have left their game across the pond and the Mets seemed to have gone on a hot streak. It doesn't matter who you're playing when you score, outscored 17-5 in the three losses.
How good is the general manager for the Mets? Think about this. Before the season started, at the end of last season, what did he do? He told Scherzer and Verlander, look, next year is going to be a bridge year, I believe was the phrase that he used. He got rid of those contracts, and look what they've been able to do.
Now, in fairness, let's not act like they're a mom and pop operation. They have $300 million payroll. They just spent their money poorly.
No, but they got rid of two older pitchers.
Yes.
The idea was not that this Mets team was supposed to be in the playoffs or making it to the NLCS this year. And I think the Vientos is a year earlier. Oh, boy. All I have to say about that is third base. Look at the difference between what the Mets have at 24 years old and look at what the Phillies have. I don't know how old Bohm is. He's about that age, maybe a couple years older.
He did not have his finest hour in this series. He was benched for game two, went 1-for-13 in the series. The 6 through 9 hitters went 5-for-54. That's the lowest ever postseason batting average for a lineup's back half.
Can we just stick with Bohm just for a second here?
Sure.
There's a story to be told. I don't know what that story is. Look, I can tell you firsthand that since the day I met him, which was shortly after he was drafted, he has issues. He seemed to have an attitude problem. But
you were whatever one of his first interviews after he was drafted when we were doing our minor league show.
I went up to Williamsport and interviewed Alec Bohm and Matt Vierling, and they couldn't be two different personalities.
The irony, by the way, of that, watching the two of them lead their teams in the playoffs right now.
Well, but the odd thing about Matt Vierling is he seems to be like the veteran leader of that team right now.
26, he's the old man.
Yeah, but he's not that good, okay? No. It's not like he's killing it there. I think he was 0-for-4 or 0-for-5 last night. But the fact is the way he carries himself is impressive. Bohm has more talent, but the way he's carrying himself and the way he's carried himself throughout his career has not been great. But the question is, what happened in this particular run? Yes, leading up to the playoffs, not great. For a manager to acknowledge that he told Bohm that he was benched in a playoff game by text message, I know there's got to be something else going on here because you don't do that.
Well, and I didn't understand. You put him in the next day, and I mean, that was the game where...
And then you blew up my phone.
Well, because Buto was wild. He couldn't find the strike zone, and Bohm gets in there, and he swings at the first pitch.
Four out of five at-bats. And the other one, he only made it to a second pitch.
And by the way, it's not just him without the plate discipline, and it's not just in this series. Like, Again,
and shockingly, it wasn't Castellanos.
I say plenty of dumb things on the radio that are wrong regularly. Right.
What's the one?
But that's throughout right? the season, I have questioned you and raised concerns about the men left on base and the lack of any sort of plan or discipline at the plate for some of these hitters. JT Realmuto is my guy. I am waiting for him to show up at the ballpark to hit at the plate. Trey Turner went 3-for-15. Brandon Marsh, 1-for-13. Brayson Stott, 2-for-11. What the hell did we watch? How did this happen 2 years in a row that these professionals...
I mean, how did it happen? We know this is how they are.
But they're professionals. Wouldn't you think... Like, if you lost a couple of cases, would you change your approach before the judge?
Well, that's different. But what we do for a career, what they do for a career is different. It's whether you have the instinct and the control or you don't have the instinct. Someone's throwing a ball at you 100 miles an hour. That ball is moving in directions you have no idea which way it's going. So when people sit there and say, well, this is easy, it's not easy. It's really hard. But for some reason, this particular team has a problem chasing a lot of those pitches. And when you get tight, this is what happens. Your muscle memory gets bad. And this team, again, look at the Phillies from 2022, look at the Mets from 2024, and look at the Phillies from 2024. Did you see fun from the moment? Kyle Schwarber led off game one with a home run, did he not? They did not look like they were having fun.
No, they looked like they were tight.
Yes. And this team is tight. Somebody needs to loosen this team up. They need a personality in that dugout who can loosen it up. And it's not the kids, because the daycare group is the one that's tensing up the most. You need to bring in a veteran who is good, who can keep this team loose. I don't know who it is.
Yes, you do.
I have no idea what.
Yes, you do.
Well, who, Alex Bregman?
Yep.
I don't know what his personality is.
But you know who you want. You want him in as a veteran guy to replace Alec Boehm.
Yeah, and it's not my money, so he can spend as much money as he wants, but how many more 300 million guys can you bring in?
It ain't my money. I don't know. Look, we asked for more honesty from our players, okay? Yeah. But then I get the honesty and it like infuriates me. So like JT said, we knew we weren't playing our best baseball going into the postseason. We were hoping that once the lights turned on, we'd flip the switch. Trey Turner said, personally, I think we get ourselves out. I don't think it matters who's on the mound.
We agree.
If you can, okay. I agree. You're right. Yeah. Why didn't you do anything about it? Like
because maybe they can't. Maybe this is it. Look, I would like to think that JT's not at the end of an illustrious career. He's at the end of an illustrious career.
And next year is his last year. He and Schwarber, it's their last year under contract next year.
Right.
So we'll see what happens when you look forward. But I'm not done with the series, by the way. I'm not letting the bullpen off the hook because the starters were spectacular and you wasted their appearances. Ranger was beyond gutty when he didn't have it. Sanchez showed up and threw. Nola was Nola. And Wheeler was...
Yeah, but even though Nola was Nola, he only gave up 2 runs.
Yeah, he had that on.
In four games, the Phillies' 4 starters gave up a combined 4 runs.
Yep.
And the question, you can get to the bullpen, is whether that matters in this day and age. Because if you look at every other...
You've been asking me this all series. You've been going through the starting rotations for these teams.
And they're awful.
You don't think
they're all bullpen. They're all bullpen.
It's funny. As much as you lose your mind on me when the Tigers or the Dodgers have an opener,
yep.
The teams that are playing that way right now are the teams that are still playing.
Right. And I don't get it. I really don't get this. Other, you know, look, the Tigers have 1 starter, Tarik Skubal.
He's very good.
He's very good. There's an understatement. He's getting on the mound today to pitch a Game 5. Could you picture anybody in baseball that you'd want other than him right now?
Not right now. I mean, he looked really good. Look, the Phillies bullpen inherited.
But our bullpen, go ahead. Go to our bullpen.
Phillies bullpen inherited 15 runners in the series. 11 of them scored. They had an 11.37 ERA, giving up 17 runs in 12 and two-thirds innings. That's the fifth worst ERA in playoff series history. History. Jeff Hoffman had a 40.50 ERA.
You really don't want me to get started on
just
Jeff Hoffman
beats
because for years, what have I been telling you is going to happen when he gets to the playoffs?
It just beats out Matt Strom at a 36 ERA and Jose Alvarado at a 27 ERA. They were so bad that they allowed four runs in three and two-thirds innings in game four, and their bullpen ERA for the series went down. Like, that's how bad they were. I know you had opinions on Jeff Hoffman.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't matter.
For a long time.
It didn't. Well, look, I had my opinions on Estevez. Mm-hmm. I told you I didn't want Estevez to be the closer all along. Gives up the grand slam. So it didn't matter what button Thompson.
Who did you want to be the closer?
Unfortunately, Hoffman. That wouldn't have worked out well either. So,
right.
Like, I want to give Thompson some heat. Because some of the decisions
agent, right?
he made, they
so
both are.
We don't
are.
Have to worry about that.
They both are. Right. Hoffman mm-hmm. and... But I think you do have to worry about it because they don't have anybody else, and I wouldn't be surprised if they bring them back because they want to be here. I think Alvarado ends up being the odd man out going forward. I think they try to bring back Hoffman and Estevez and have Strom and Kirkering, and I think that's what they try to do for their top four.
Kirkering wasn't exactly stellar either.
No. Not at all. He didn't.
you got to hope that some of the young guys come up and, I mean, you got to hope Lazar comes up. You got to hope some of these other guys that were in the minors come up and are able to grow throughout the season.
Superstars
because what
are
you're
fun.
Seeing is what these other teams is, their bullpens are where their strength are, and as well as clutch hitting. And the Phillies bullpen, which was supposed to be a strength, was an immense weakness, and it doesn't make any sense.
Is the Johan Rojas experiment over?
Yes. Well, he still might be a bridge. The hope is, if you could have your wish list of what's going to happen next season, first and foremost, Ranger has to not have some serious injury that we all hear that he's getting surgery in the offseason. If he's okay, your starting five is the best starting five in Major League Baseball by a long shot. It's not even close. If you go into the season with a healthy Wheeler, Nola, Sanchez, Ranger, and Painter,
who's heading to Arizona for the fall league,
that is going to be the best starting pitching 1 through 5 that you could possibly imagine. Okay. And then hopefully Abel is somehow turning it around, and then he's your number 6. That's what the first thing that you got to hope for. Second thing you're hoping for is that, and Dombrowski has a history of not being fearful of having people come up early, making those decisions throughout his career. So you got to hope that
Miller.
Crawford can play center. Well, you know that he can play it. He's actually a better center fielder than Rojas is. If he can hit better, and he can, but if he can hit major league pitching, then you have him in center field. And then the question is, what do you do with the infield? Now, you and I have talked off the air, and we'll talk a little bit on the air now about the fact is, can you convince Trey Turner, the worst fielding shortstop in the National League, to go to left field? If you can, you've solved your hitting issue in left field. Because now you have a guy who can hit 20, 25 home runs in left field, who can field, because if you watch him track fly balls, he's really good at it.
And then what do you do? Put Aiden Miller there?
Well, so then the question is, does Stock go to short? Does Aiden Miller go to short? And then what do you do? And what about Edmundo Sosa? What about him? Why is he not being given a chance? He's a great fielder. He's a very good hitter.
He chases
I don't
so
need
much
him. What?
He chases so much too. He's got the highest chase rate. I want people, look, I get it. You're working on the fielding. I want mm-hmm. some discipline on the at the plate.
Well, you're not going to get a ton of it.
Oh my God.
You're just not. Unless you're going to change the whole roster.
I don't think they're
and
doing
you're not going to be able to do that.
I
so
mean,
you're
Harper's...
going to have to pick and choose. So is the question, are they going to go out and throw stupid money at Bregman? And will Bregman want to come here because Bregman has a relationship with Hinch? And the question is whether he's going to want to go to Detroit.
Yeah, I don't know. A hitting coach goes. I don't think they fire the manager.
I don't think this is on the hitting coach. And by the way, who brought the hitting coach here?
I understand.
Bryce Harper.
I get it, but
Bryce Harper is the reason the Trey Turner's here.
You're not going to make any coaching staff.
You're not getting
staff,
rid of the hitting coach.
You're not going to make any coaching staff changes when 2 years in a row your lineup doesn't perform, doesn't change their approach.
I think if they think they can patch the holes, I don't think that they make any moves with regard to this pitching staff, coaching staff, any staff. I think that everybody comes back as far as coaching, front office, etc.
Let's leave it there. We'll hit the break. When we come back, we'll talk some Sixers with Keith and then wrap up the show.
Operating engineers are the men and women that move mountains. And the Engineers Labor Employer Cooperative, ELEC, puts them to work. They create opportunities for the men, women, and union signatory contractors of Local 825, repaving our roads, keeping our homes bright and warm, and even building our favorite team stadium. We understand infrastructure. That's why ELEC and Local 825 are ready to get to work.
All right, Jeff, thanks for trying to have somebody to help me think that there is life after the Philadelphia Phillies sports season, and I don't have to necessarily depend on the Eagles. Keith Pompey joins us from the Philadelphia Inquirer, traveling with the Sixers. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing well. What about you?
We're living the dream, other than the fact that
Jason was ready to jump off a bridge. What are you kidding me? Yeah, I can't have him over my house because there's a bridge two blocks away. Jeff, because you should have seen him after the Phillies loss, or during the Phillies loss.
Jeff, I mean, but Jason, you kind of knew they were going to lose after they lost the one, right? I mean, you kind of knew it.
Jeff will tell you, okay, for all of the dumb things that I say on this radio show, a month ago, the team I said I didn't want to play was the Mets. For the exact reasons that they lost, men left on base. I didn't plan on the bullpen becoming basically reincarnating Taijuan Walker and all of their bodies and becoming a dumpster fire themselves. But the lineup did exactly what they did all season. They chased and they left men on base. So it's not totally surprising what happened. They played the hot team. They got beat by the hot team. So,
yeah.
I mean, it sucked, but I've been asking Jeff for 2 months now.
You know, it was so bad. Just before we get that to basketball, I told Jason it was so bad after game one that there wasn't even an Eagles chant on the concourse. You know, yeah, there for some reason in Philadelphia, unlike anywhere else, people need the need to feel special by saying that they can spell a six-letter word.
Oh, God.
At every sporting event.
It. You know, the funny thing, though, is before we get to the basketball here, so we talked to Greg Dobbs last week before it all started, and he was like, oh, I should join in on your text message chain so that I can see what it's like to be a fan. Both Jeff and I were like, nah, we don't think you really want to see what Jason says on text message during a game. So we talked him out of being on that one. All right, tell me what's
going on. But now we have Keith on to tell us about how easy it's going to be to get that championship trophy back in Philadelphia.
All right. Tell me what's up. You're traveling with the team, some preseason basketball. It was not the most competitive game that you saw the other night, but we did see basketball. Talk to me about the Sixers team as we head through the preseason.
Well, the one thing we do know about the Sixers is that game is going to be so much more competitive tomorrow night. Because like you said, that was the worst game that I've ever witnessed. Like that, you know, that they played. I mean, worse, like opponent. Like it was horrible. Well, the thing about the Sixers is right now, give you guys a little update. The team is in Des Moines, Iowa. That's where I'm at. Joel Embiid was not with the team today. He was back and, you know, back in the Philly area. You know, he had to get his knee assessed, and it was previously scheduled for today. So, he did that. I asked Nick Nurse if Joel is going to make the rest of this trip. Like, is he going to be there? Because after this, they play the Boston Celtics on Saturday. And then on Monday, they play the Atlanta Hawks. And Nick said, you know, they'll see what happens. you know, with the assessment, and then they'll take it from there. I doubt if we see Joel, you know what I mean? I doubt if he'll play tomorrow, join the team. Who knows? He may join the team like in Boston, or he may do it in Atlanta. But if you're getting your knee checked out, I don't know if he's playing right now. So that's an update. In regards to the team, you know, it's weird. Everything is new. But there's a certain vibe around this team that everybody's loving each other, right? And we've seen this before, right? But it's new. And when you have a lot of guys and everybody comes in and they all have their own perception of how things are going to go. And then when the reality hits, or if they start losing, that's when things not say go left, but everybody isn't as excited, you know? But right now, I just have to say that, you know, it's been a lot of I love you, man. I love you, man. This is a great locker room, you know, the whole nine. But again, this is what you expect from 27 of the 30 NBA teams heading in training camp, because they all think that they have a chance to accomplish their goals. And until they start playing and things don't go the way they do, it's going to be this way.
Hmm. So you say everything's new. What I now have heard is Joel Embiid talking about how he came into camp in shape. He's lost some weight. Heard that before you came on. And now I'm hearing that Joel Embiid is back in Philadelphia while his crew is in Iowa with a previously scheduled whatever of his
assessment.
Is that news? Did we know that?
I wrote it today. Yeah.
But my question is, when they say previously scheduled, like it was scheduled yesterday, or is this something that before
previously scheduled 20 minutes before
they said we have a schedule that we're going to be checking his knee periodically, and it just so happens that October 11th or 12th will be the time that he has his knee checked again.
I was told when I asked about it, because, you know, I gave that look like
the same look I gave you.
Look, and he's like, yeah, it was already scheduled. So, you know, I kind of think that when you have games on back to back, but give me, you're raising valid points, serious points. Like who does this? Who do you schedule it when you got it the day before a game
in Iowa?
But I do think that is one of those things. Let's face it. When it comes down to it, the knee is much more important, making sure his knee is healthy, than playing in front of a sold out crowd at Wells Fargo Arena against the Minnesota Timberwolves in a game that you probably won't play a lot of minutes in, if you play at all, right? So I get where you're coming from. It does raise some questions. I mean, heck, it raised a lot of questions. Like, if he's still having to get evaluated, and if he has to take it slowly now, then why was he playing in the Olympics, right? So it raises a lot of questions, and then it raises questions like, well, was Lord. The knee better then, or is it going back? So,
yeah. Oh, man. Are you bringing up the Olympics? Jason has been squawking about that since – before last season.
I didn't
ended.
Text you it, but that was my first my thought. Lord. Keith, I saw the video when you asked him. I saw your face when he gave the comment, and I'm thinking to myself, what's up with the knee now? Like, he had summer to rest. He was supposed to be in shape. I didn't think there was a knee issue currently. So that was surprising to me as a fan. It does go with the larger, you know, Nick's talked about how he has to manage Paul George and Joel Embiid through this season. Can you talk about that? Because I do a show with the guy who hates load management more than few other people on this planet, and I feel like we're going to get a big dose of load management coming at us this season.
I do too, but I think it's not going to be as big as everybody else expects it. And here's the reason why. If you take Paul George and Joel Embiid off this team, even though this team is supposed to be as deep. And I'm asking both of you guys a question before I answer this. So this team is as deep. do you see this team being a legitimate playoff contender? I mean, championship contender or a top four team in the East if you take Paul George and Joel Embiid off of it?
No.
He said, I was saying no, even with them on it.
Exactly. Well, okay. So that answer. What about you, Jason? Do you agree?
Not without the Bucks team.
Okay. So here's the deal. So the 76ers last year, you know, we all thought that it was a healthy Joel Embiid. They were a team that could get out of the second round. Well, what happened is Joel missed a lot of games, and they were struggling. And then guess what? They ended up being, what, the seventh seed after losing the play? I mean, winning the play-in game, right? So the deal is, if you really want to rest these two guys, and let's face it, the goal is to get into the championship. But there's no guarantee that they can beat Boston or the New York Knicks. So if you're telling me you're going to rest these guys a lot of games and you're going to settle for, at best, the third seed, you're going to be in trouble. Like, they have to finish within the top two, in my opinion, to be able to have a chance of beating New York, right? They have to. So when we talk about load management, and I get it, you know, and we listen to Joel Embiid say, hey, look, all I care about is winning the title. I don't care about making all NBA. I don't care about the scoring title, this and that. I don't believe on any of that. Like, I do believe he wants to win, but you have to play in at least 65 games for your statistics to count, right? You also, in order for you to make, I think the statistics MVP? Is like a little less than that, but for you to make all NBA, for you to be the MVP, all mm-hmm. this and that, we're talking about legacy right now. So when it comes down to that, although, yes, Joel Embiid wants to win a championship, you can't tell me. I mean, he's saying it, but I it's hard for me to believe that he doesn't want to be first, second, or third team MVP. He doesn't want to, like, win a rebounding title or be one of these other things. Like, I just don't see it. Now, again, I do believe they're going to make the proper steps to make him healthy, help he's healthy and all. But I don't think the load management is going to be as much as people thought. I just don't. I don't see it.
But when you talk about legacy in Philadelphia basketball history, he's not going to have the legacy he thinks he does by winning a scoring title, winning more MVPs. The fact is, he's already third at best as far as legacy centers. Moses Malone won a championship and is in the Hall of Fame. Will Chamberlain, championship, in the Hall of Fame. If he doesn't realize that at some point he has to win a championship for his legacy to matter, then he's missing the boat.
I think he realizes it. I think he's just saying what he has to say. I mean, what else is he going to say? No, I want to win an MVP over winning a title.
Well, yeah, but is there a chance that when does the preseason end? How much time do we have for these guys to get ready? And will they? And my next part of that is whether or not Maxey, George, and Embiid will see the court
together.
At all together before the preseason ends.
I think we'll see that. I do. Unless if we don't yeah. see that, then the need might be a little bit better than, I mean, worse than worse. What we thought. Mm-hmm. I believe that now there's two things. There's two games I think we'll see it. One of the two. On October the 16th at home against the Brooklyn Nets, right? Or it would be.
Well, hold on. Before you go on to the next one, is Ben Simmons playing in that game?
Yep.
And is his shot much better?
Nope.
I mean, you know what? The thing about Ben, you know, when we look at the thing about Ben, is kind of like a cycle, right? Like with the mm-hmm. Joel Embiid thing. Like, we always see where in the summertime where, you know, there's these videos out there of Ben, like, hitting threes and looking like the second coming of Steph Curry. Right?
Jason sends them to me every year.
It's my favorite time of year. It's Ben Simmons season.
And then the preseason comes, and he may attempt a couple or whatever, but then when the season comes along, they just don't happen anymore. So it's hard to say. I mean, for him, I hope that the shot is better. I hope that he takes it, right? I just do. Because, you know, you get tired of seeing this never-ending cycle. In regards to Embiid, and I think that we could possibly see it that game, or you can see it the last game of the season. Now, the regular season is kind of like officially over on like October the 20th. I think that at that point, that's when you have to have your roster finalized. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to play the Milwaukee Bucks on October the 23rd in the home and season opener. So, yeah, but at that particular time, if you're a coach, what you'd like to do is for that either the next to last preseason game or the last preseason game, you want to get your rotation in order. You want to get guys out there. Now, a lot of times what you do is that fourth quarter. So you'll have guys in your rotation playing through three quarters. And that fourth quarter is when, you know, that's who you could find out who's not going to make the team, because it's like, hey, man, you've been a really good sport.
Get out there.
Why don't you go check in? You know what I mean? We're going to let you score a lot of points, and we'll probably let you keep your uniform so you can take it home and show your friends that you were with the squad. So typically that normally what happens. But if you go by what happened last year, it could be that final preseason game where Embiid played like a quarter or so in that final preseason game.
Talk to me about style of play. It seems like they're emphasizing an increased offensive pace, pushing the ball, being faster in transition, and defensive rebounding. When I saw that, I was excited. I was like, wait, you can rebound in this league? So are we going to actually, like, I still have nightmares of the Knicks out-rebounding us and out-hustling us and out-aggressiving us. Talk to me about what they're trying to put in place in camp to push back on that in the past.
You know, as far as, I mean, what they're implementing, a lot of stuff is, if you look at it, the thing is, I think like this team is really set up for Maxi, right? For Maxi to excel, because what they want to do is like they want to push the ball, or some people say push, throw it ahead, kick it ahead, do whatever you want. But they literally want guys out on the wing. They want, when Drummond or whomever grabs the rebound, he wants everyone sprinting, and he wants them getting to the rim or getting in the paint. They don't have to shoot the ball, but they find someone else, right? So to me, this is what their game plan is. That's what they're implementing. And it all seems like this favors Maxi. Because when you think about it, last year I know he was a point guard and he did stuff. He made the All-Star team. But Maxi's awakening, so to speak, came through this way. You remember a couple years ago where mm-hmm. they were like, no, James Harden wanted to slow it up. No, we got to get past half court X amount of time. We got to get Maxi the ball. And I think like what that is going to do is basically is going to play to Paul George's strength as well, right? It's going to play to Kelly Oubre's strength. It's going to play to Ricky Council, you know, Jr.'s strength.
Yeah, you know whose strength it doesn't play to, though?
It doesn't play to the big fellas. I got it. It doesn't
that's
play
the concern.
To him. And that's the concern, but at the same time, I think that there are going to be different styles that they're going to have to play. I think that you're going to have a when Joel's on the floor and when he's not on the floor. Now, I will say that Joel has lost a lot of weight. He looks good, right? Mm-hmm. But he has to lose weight in order to be able to keep the pressure off the knee and to be able to get up and down the floor. But you are correct. It doesn't really play to his strength. It plays to the strength of the wings.
It should play to his strength. The problem is that he has this tendency, especially towards the second half of the season, to be trailing. He looks like when there's a five-year-old soccer game, there's one kid dribbling the ball down and the other guys are just watching in the back and slowly coming. And that's what he looks like the second half of the season when he, I don't know if it's motivation. I don't know if it's the knee. I don't know what it is. Hopefully, if he's lost the weight and keeps it off over the course of the season, that helps. But if everybody's running and he's not, I'm concerned about whether this offensive strategy is going to work.
It may not. I mean, it may not, because let's face it, at the end of the day, in order for them to win the championship, they got to go through him. He has to be healthy, you know. And to be honest with you, I don't know too many teams that play at that pace. I mean, the Lakers did that won championship, but for them back in the day.
Right.
But most of the time, it's like a half-court game. You know what I mean? Like, it slows down. And, you know, maybe Nick Nurse is telling us stuff. Like, hey, we got to play two ways. Because when you look at Drummond is a center who is a great rebounder, and he loves running the floor. So you have to have two different styles. Now, I hate being Nick Nurse, and I hate being Maxey and Paul George, because what that's going to do is you guys may have to change. Like, I'm going to play one day this way. The next day we're going to play something different. But I don't know if that is going to win a championship. And because here's part of the problem is when you run up and down, now it's good running up and down, but when you run up and down the floor, I kind of believe that also plays to the strength of the Boston Celtics, and it plays to the strength of the Knicks, who are young, have younger guys, right? You know, mm-hmm. PG, can he keep up? Although that's his strength, can he keep up with those young guys? The same thing, you know, talking about with the Boston and New York. So, you know, I think if you're the Sixers, you would love to have a half-court game, and where you have you're going to force Karl Anthony Towns to guard Embiid, or you're going to force somebody else to switch on him, and whatever that does is that's going to free up shots for others, right? So, right. You know what I mean? I think that might be their best bet in the playoffs. But for right now, you do have to have two different styles of play.
You talked about freeing up shots. This team has a lot of interchangeable wings. Nurse compared it to his Raptors teams. I don't know that it's quite there. But talk about the versatility that they're looking to have with different bodies out on the floor.
Yeah, the one thing that I think that's pretty good is we talk about the starting lineup. The projected starting lineup is Embiid, Maxey, Paul George, Caleb Martin, and Kelly Oubre Jr. So when you look at it, they're hoping that they're going to have three interchangeable wings, you know, and George, Martin, and Oubre, where they can switch off and play different guys. So you basically have those three. And then you look at a guy like, you know, Ricky Council, another dude. Like, he's a guy who can play the two guard. He could play the small forward. He could play power forward, right? And then you have KJ Martin. You know, these guys aren't exactly star players, but they're two young, both of them extremely athletic, right? High flyers. Whereas KJ Martin can be, you know, a rebounding undersized four and a three, right? And then you have Yabusele, a guy who can play the four and he can play the five, small ball five. And then this is where it gets crazy because you have Eric Gordon. You know, he's what, the second oldest player on the team. He's not the same player that he was maybe 5 years ago, maybe not even 2 years ago. But the one thing skill set that he does have is he can still shoot the rock. And what that enables to do is when you have these athletic guys, he basically is just going to be out there stretching the floor. Now, the one thing that I'm going to say, too, y'all, that I really like with this team, and I was shocked that Eric Gordon got to start in place of Paul George when Paul George didn't play over Ricky Council. But when I watched the game, I looked at Caleb Martin. You know, he was a guy who was kind of like he doesn't touch the ball. If you're not really paying close attention to him, you don't know he's on the floor. But what he did do was he was setting screens. He was like directing the floor, making sure people were getting in right spots. He was also getting out of people's way. And then also what that enabled was Kelly Oubre to be a poor man's Paul George, like have that role where, you know, he was all over the place, like doing different things. And then you have Eric Gordon, who was in the perimeter. And what happens is you pass him the ball, he knocks down a couple threes, and that opens up everything for everyone else, right? So when you look at this, this is really helps out with the interchangeable part, that we know what Martin's going to be able to do, but you also see these other guys. And the key is for the Sixers is when Paul George is out there, it's going to be key for Kelly Oubre to be able to knock down threes, right? Because he's going to have more of that Eric Gordon role, so to speak.
It sounds good. I'm happy that Jason has a little optimism now.
I'm
just sitting here waiting for Jason to smile and be happy and get over his Phillies sadness and his Eagles, the sky is falling stuff. But I just have to remind people, even though it's just the beginning of the preseason, how are they going to beat the Knicks and the Celtics?
I don't think it's going to be tough for them to do that. It really is. I mean, it really is when we talk about it. Now, the thing about the 76ers is, you know, if you're going to beat the Knicks and the Celtics, it's going to have to be Joel Embiid overload, right? I mean, honestly. Like, yeah. Joel Embiid is going to have to do some phenomenal things for them to win that game. You know, when I look at – now, the one thing I will say about the Knicks – I feel like the Knicks lost a lot. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like the Knicks lost a lot in this trade when it comes down going up against the Sixers. I think the trade makes them better against a lot of teams, but I don't think it makes them better against the Sixers. And the reason being is because I don't think Karl Anthony Towns can guard Embiid at all, right?
At least Julius Randle would body him up.
Well, Julius Randle could body him up. But I also felt like the Sixers are a smaller team, right? We look at it. We kept saying they don't have a power forward. They don't have a power forward. Is Yabusele going to be able to step up against Randle? Is a Caleb Martin or whoever, these interchangeable guys, how is that going to work, right? They need to go out and get a power forward. Well, the thing about Julius Randle, he could have been the X factor in a playoff series when things slow up, right? You feed him the ball, you do what you got, you get like a center, whatever. Well, now, and I get it, they needed a center. But now that they not only gave up Julius Randle, they got rid of DiVincenzo as well, who is an extremely tough, aggressive, gritty performer who like is a better defender than people give him credit for. And then we all know he can knock down shots. So, yeah, now you have Landry Shamet. Landry Shamet is a journeyman who some people think may or may not make the team, right? And then from there, it's kind of like Embiid is going to devour Cat. Another thing is you don't have to worry about there's no more mismatches in regards to the four spot. So I get it. It sounds good on paper. You brought in an all-star. You bring in a guy who they say is the best three-point shooting big man. But every time Embiid plays him, he gets 40.
All right. Well, here's a name. If somebody would have given me this name in the pool that Keith was going to mention him twice during an interview, I wouldn't have taken the bet. You've now mentioned Selly twice. Is he a legitimate piece of the rotation for this season?
You saying Selly? Oh, yeah. Yabusele?
Yeah, you mentioned him twice now.
You know what? We'll find out. I mean, we'll really find out. Like, I know a lot of people were doing cartwheels, and everybody was excited about what he did against, you know, the team from New Zealand. Mm-hmm. But I have to see more. Like, again,
who's getting excited about anything that happened against a team
I think right now it's like, see, the thing about you is I'm a little closer to you, Jeff, than everybody.
Yeah.
Because I've been here. This is going to be my 12th season covering the Sixers.
Wow, you're and old. It's been,
yeah, I'm getting old, bro. I'm getting old. But the thing is, it's kind of like everyone gets amped up for the preseason. You know, everybody wants the Sixers to win. Everybody's saying they have a championship team. And the thing is, if we're really going to be truthful, a lot of the free agents that they picked up outside of Jimmy Butler, a lot of the free agents that they picked up didn't live up to the hype, right? A lot of them. Now, J.J. Redick was great, you know, stuff like that. But since then, a lot of the guys didn't live up to the hype. Now, all of a sudden, everybody's saying it's a new time, right? And we just have to see. I mean, we have to. The last time Selly was in the NBA, it didn't really work out well for him. He goes overseas. He plays. And, you know, he was more of like in a balanced attack. He wasn't like dominating people. You know, he was getting respectable statistics. But he became the star of the Olympics, dunking on LeBron, doing all that other stuff. And then guess what happened? People in Philly was like, we got to go get him. He's great. He's great. He's great. Well, the competition is going to be better than what it was individually wise, athleticism wise, than what it was in the Olympics. So we'll have to wait and see how that translates. But my biggest concern, though, more so is this. In that preseason game, the Sixers have three centers. In that preseason game, Selly was the backup center. They didn't go to Adembona. So that's telling me is, do you guys think he's ready? Or is he going to go there? Because now you have an undersized power forward. I mean, he's a big, stocky dude. But you got a Charles Barkley type on steroids. Not saying he's on steroids, but he's just a diesel dude. You got a more bulked up Charles Barkley playing your backup center on the nights that Embiid's not going to play for right now. And I don't know how that is going to do, how that's going to fare against NBA competition.
All right.
Well, maybe they do well, huh?
Well, we're 2 weeks away from the NBA regular season. Yet you're in Iowa, football country, Big Ten country. Here's your chance to gloat about Pitt football.
Oh, you want to take it?
Or no? Even though you don't watch the games, go ahead.
I watch them.
What other radio show gives you time to go on about Pitt football?
Nah, you know,
Pitt's our college football expert.
I wish. You know, college football is actually my favorite sport. I just can't watch Pitt. I get a little shaky because, you know, I talk a lot of trash. And I'm like,
no, you would never talk trash. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I talk a lot of trash.
Says the guy who has a Jordan.
It's good to gloat. But at the same time, I got to keep it 100. Like, the ACC isn't really that good. The North Carolina game, that was a good name victory. But that's the same UNC team that James Madison hung 70 on the week before. and then they, you know, they did defeat Cincinnati. They came back against Cincinnati. You know, they like, didn't they play like Youngstown State? Like, you know,
tough schedule.
So, the Penguins,
tough
schedule.
Yeah. So it's kind of like this and that. Now the ACC doesn't really impress me. I mean, but I will say this. I will say this. They would beat Rutgers by 28.
I knew you were going there.
See, that's not where I thought he was going with it.
Oh, I knew you were going
right the year with to the other Michigan, one, too.
Yeah, he's already written off.
The year to beat Michigan.
He's already written off Michigan.
But I enjoy
you saying you wouldn't gloat. Says the guy who has a crying Jordan meme for every action that happens in the world. No, definitely, you would never. Will you get up to see, speaking of Rutgers, will you get up to see my basketball team this year?
It depends on who y'all playing.
I would think you'd want to see some of the guys that are playing on it. I mean, we finally got some players.
Because they're only going to be there for 1 year.
Exactly.
My question is, why Rutgers, though? Like
Steve Peichel. Actually, it's because of Dylan Harper talked Ace into it because he's a Rutgers kid from Ron being there. Like, they have experience with the school. They felt comfortable. But that's how Ace got there, is because the relationship with Dylan playing in the in all the tournaments. And now Peichel's done a good job starting to bring in a recruiting pipeline. Now let's see what happens, because they need to replace the school president and the athletic director right now. That's never a good thing that you have to deal with. But I mean, it looks like I'm going to get something exciting to watch on the court this season. And you both know the Rack is a fun place to see a basketball game.
And somehow we ended up talking about Rutgers. Let's get back to Pitt for 1 second.
Because
what I need to know is when Pitt was good, when Pitt was good a couple years ago and Pickett was the quarterback, every week I had to hear from Keith that he's not the real deal.
Mr. Hands.
And talking about his tiny hands.
I still remember Keith coming on talking about his hand size every week.
I wasn't a fan.
I'm not a fan. See, the only problem with college football, you can get tricked because that's the only football is different from basketball. So like basketball, you have these two McDonald's All-Americans, what they're like, number one. One was number one in one class. The other one was like number three, whatever, right? So you get these legitimate guys, and they can go on a college stage and dominate, right? You can get them. But in football, when we start talking about 6 years, seniors, right?
Seven for Michigan's quarterback.
Seven years, seniors. So you know how your body has to develop. You have a head start of like 4 years in the weight room, doing some serious stuff, eating trainer's table food, doing all this other stuff. So when I realized that Kenny Pickett was like older than everyone like that, and I was like, but he can't make that throw. And then I noticed that the receiver he had, the guy who transferred, I forget his name, but he transferred to USC. And I was like, yo, that was a heck of a catch. I
mean, Jordan Addison.
Yeah, Jordan, he was like diving everywhere. And then Pickett would get like the credit. I wasn't a fan. And I'm not a fan of guys who need gloves to throw the ball.
All right.
Like, not a fan of it.
So my lead into that was
I've lost total control over this conversation.
You now have a freshman quarterback who transferred from Alabama, and Eli Holstein. Do you believe in him?
Does he wear gloves?
All right.
I do. I mean, my thing is, you know how it is football? Like, dude, so Kenny Pickett, he put up numbers, so the Steelers drafted him. But then they got rid of him.
Where is he now?
Well, isn't he with the Eagles?
Yeah.
Need to back up.
Stay tuned. Join us each week for the Pitt Football Report with Keith Pompey. Keith, safe travels,
Hail Pitt.
My man. Enjoy Iowa. Please bring some good vibes to Embiid's health, and we'll talk to you as the season gets going.
Yeah, I look forward to talking about it, especially talking about Rutgers losing.
I knew that was coming. Have a good one, man. Hope Keith's having fun out there in Iowa, man. Still don't know why the Sixers are playing out there.
Beyond me, but apparently Joel Embiid's not.
Look, I was glad we had Keith set up to talk because when I saw the interviews posted, my first thought was, did we know this? Like, there hasn't been any talk off season that his knee is not healthy. He played.
But it was scheduled.
I mean, look, I'm going to reserve judgment.
I could spend 30 minutes on what that means.
I'm going to reserve judgment because you know my opinion. We've only got about 4 minutes left, so let's go to the other disaster in Philadelphia, the Eagles. They went into the bye getting destroyed. It was not pretty. Their first quarter stats so far, they're giving up 44 yards, 29th in the NFL, 4 yards per play. They're tied for 29th in the red zone. I mean, they're difficult to watch right now. Now, here's my question. They are playing literally the biggest waste of an investment ever this weekend in Deshaun Watson. So one of two things is going to happen. They're going to beat him up really bad, or there's going to be a call for Sirianni to go. One of those two things are going to happen. I don't think there's any middle ground after this weekend's game. Your thoughts on what we are seeing from this Eagles team right now, which as a fan is very hard to watch.
Boy, Michkov is going to be really good.
I'm so glad you went back there.
Like, you are such a sky is falling guy right now, and you started the show.
Says the guy
who mentioned hockey, and here you want to talk with what little time we have left about more sky is falling. So I'm going to completely ignore you, and I'm going to go to the Flyers.
Okay, before that, can I ask? Does it matter?
No, I'm not talking
Eagles. I'm asking you another NFL question. Will the Jets be better now that they fired their coach?
Again, I'm ignoring anything with Aaron Rodgers. Always have, always will. Now, let's get to the Flyers.
Okay.
The Flyers are starting tonight out on the West Coast in Canada against a really good Vancouver team. And whatever happens in the actual game today, there is a buzz going on in Philadelphia with two kids that are under the age of 20 who are going to be playing in their first NHL game.
They've got to have one of the youngest teams in the league, right? Right now.
Well, they believe Jet Luchenko is going to be the youngest Flyer ever. He's 18 years old as of this game, and Michkov is 19 years old. And everything we saw from in the preseason from Michkov is this guy is everything that we hope that he is. And the Flyers may have just struck gold because nobody thought he was going to be coming here this early. Otherwise, would he have been the first or second pick in the draft?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. If there wasn't a question of whether he'd be available, he clearly had the top skill in the draft. You watch his vision passing, separate from his skill shooting. Just finding players in the few games in the preseason. He was one of the high, I think he had was the highest scoring player in the preseason.
And how much better could he possibly make the players else. That are on his line?
Yeah, everybody else around him.
There's going to be growing pains, and I'm sure there's going to be times where Tortorella drives us all crazy because he wants to bench him or thinks that he needs to do this or that.
There's no way Tortorella can bench Michkov.
Yeah, there is.
Really?
Yeah, there is. You really think that Tortorella is afraid of doing anything at this point
He's
in his career?
He's going to need to get a translator to tell him to sit down.
I just think that people should enjoy this. This is, don't fool yourself. You're not winning a Stanley Cup this year. But I think that this team is exciting. I think it's young. I think they got some veterans. I still think they probably need a better goalie.
I was going to ask you about the goaltending.
Look, Ersson's good. He's not great. I mean, I think the hope was that the Bruins goalie was going to keep holding out.
Yeah.
And the Flyers were going to swoop in and get him. And now that that's not happening, you got to figure out what exactly your goalie options are. We'll see how that goes. But the one thing we know is this team's going to be fun. This is not going to be your boring brand of hockey.
How exciting is that just to have? I mean, we've done this show through the downs of the Flyers. Yeah. I mean, 8 years on the air, there hasn't been signs of life at times from this team. I mean, we went to the building in games where other fans took it over, and now all of a sudden, you've got excitement here.
Like, I think that people are going to have fun here, and considering what just happened with the Phillies, I still don't think there's going to be much buzz for the Sixers. And what's going on with the Eagles right now, the Flyers are hope. That's what they represent right now. Hope for the city that right now doesn't seem to have much.
That's going to be the last word for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. Make sure to join us next Friday night to help you start your weekend in style. Have a great one, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.